Alright, time for another draftphysics.com, debatephysics.com also, but not much to debate, except statements made by people with no evidence, you know, blah, 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 blah. So, another one of those pieces of crap. So, another news, Stephen Breaux is promising, okay, that he's going to do a new version of the clay experiment that proves kinetic energy. And I'll just predict ahead of time. He's going to have a big giant pile of clay, and then he's going to drop a weight on it, and the clay is going to bend. Yeah, and he's going to call that the same experiment. Oh, he's just so stupid. Anyway, he's just so bad. All right, so this is just as bad, frankly. These comments are just so stupid, so unevidenced. Anyway. All right, so don't you recognize that the extra energy it takes to get a heavy mass moving has everything to do with inertia? So let's understand, inertia is just saying that there's a proportional fact that to make something move, you have to give it energy, okay, or it has to take it. And the fact is that it depends on how many pieces of matter there are, will tell you how much energy each piece of matter can have, because they all have to sort of move together, right? So an object has to move as one unit. So if energy is going to affect it, the energy has to be spread over all of the individual pieces. And so obviously the individual pieces have to go much slower than the thing that hit them, if it's less mass. I mean, it's not, well, anyway. We'll draw it, but I mean, it's just so, you know, there's no such thing as any inertial force. There's no force opposing motion. There's nothing. There's just, you have to actually give something energy for it to have it. All right. And nothing to do with friction. So, friction isn't a force either. Okay, friction is just you giving your energy to some other object. That's friction. Feynman will tell you that. Because we can eliminate that in an experiment. Yes, we can. We can do experiments in space. And the argument is you have absolutely no evidence defending your theory of inertia. You can't show me an experiment done in space where your special inertia problem shows up in any way whatsoever. Also, scales aren't designed to measure impact. So what? Lots of things aren't designed for the purpose you can use them for. I mean, you know, a gun was invented for self-defense. Yeah. You know, I can stick a fork in Hitler's eye. I mean, come on, too silly. So that's an invalid claim. It's just too silly. There's nothing stopping springs from measuring active motion. Okay, it doesn't do just gravity. Just the motion created by gravity. It doesn't measure any other motion. Bullshit. So, again, this is just such nonsense. All right, so the simple argument is, it's sort of related to this whole discussion in a way. I mean, once you think about it, rationally. So I have a thing moving, okay? There, a bit. Okay, and let's just say it's going 10 miles an hour or whatever. And it's moving in a direction. Okay, if it hits another 10 a mile an hour bit, we know what's going to happen. The full 10 miles an hour will go into this bit. It'll leave and this one will stop. So all of the energy will be transferred. So now if I have the same bit, 10 miles an hour, and it hits two bits, or, you know, two bits drawn another way, but anyway, two, a mass of twice. So it's one mass that weighs twice, has two bits in it. Well, you know, logically, you know what's going to happen. The two bits are going to go five, okay, and so five. It's going to be split between the two bits, and the twice as heavy thing will leave with half the velocity. All right, and it's three bits, so I could do three, and then I could do four, and five, and six, or I could do 100, or I could do 1,000,000. So I could have a 1,000,000 bit object. And one more zero, right? Yeah. And I can have my 10 miles an hour. And all you're going to do is say, well, it's 10 miles an hour, you know, divided into 10 million, right? So I can do that, and I'll end up with, each one going 100 miles an hour, 100,000 of a mile an hour, 100,000th of 1 mile an hour. Yeah, that's all they can do. They can't, you know, I have to take this gigantic number and divide it into 10. I'm going to get a tiny percentage. So if you did the experiment in space and I had a big giant object and I hit it with a little tiny pea and the pea stops moving, okay, it sticks, then this big giant object will take the velocity and spread it over all of its little bits. And so all you have to do is figure out how many bits of matter it has, how much atomic weight it has, okay, and divide it into the atomic weight of the thing that hit and the speed it's going, and you'll get the answer. So there's no inertia. There's just the obligation to give the money. And so you have a $10 bill here, let's say, and you have to split it into pennies and, you know, maybe even smaller things. Let's say you can split it into pennies, and you have to give each little piece a penny. So you'll have the same amount of money, it's just going to be in a different form. So instead of being in a $10 bill, it's going to be in the form of pennies. Distributed evenly among all of these little atoms that the whole object represents. But that's what will happen in space. I could hit something with a grain of dust. Something could be sitting in space, and I hit it with just a piece of dust. It's still going to give it motion in the direction the dust hit. It's just a fact. I hit it with a little bit of sunlight. It's going to move in the direction of the sunlight in a little tiny speed. The sunlight's going the speed of light. Well, it's going the speed of light, but it has a mass, an infinitesimally small mass. And so it has to be distributed over commensurately small proportions of mass. And you're going to come up with a tiny speed because it's a tiny object. It's a tiny amount of momentum. So, you don't have anything. You don't have a single fact to dispute any of this. You don't have any evidence. You don't have any experiments. You don't have absolutely nothing to say there's any inertia that stops things from happening. The inertia consumed the energy and it didn't. Nothing happened. There's no evidence, there's no experiment, there's no anything. And what there is evidence of, friction. That yes, okay, you can have frictional inertia in the sense that you have a big, giant, heavy mass sticking to the ground, okay? The ground is absorbing its energy, okay? Because it's stuck in the ground. It's stuck in a dimple that's made in the ground. And it takes some extra energy to get out of its friction, to start it rolling. So in the context, exactly the opposite of what you said, in the context of friction, you can absorb energy before something will start moving. So there'll be this example where, hey, I put energy in, I hit it with a pea, and it didn't go anywhere. Well, it didn't go anywhere because you didn't have enough energy to get out of your friction to start the mechanism of being free of friction. The faster you go, the less friction. So the slower you go, the more friction. So it takes a little bit of work to get something started to move. But that's the only form of inertia there is, and it's clearly an absorption of energy. You're absorbing the energy because you're using gravity to suck it out of its... You're sucking its blood, so to speak, by using gravity as the conduit to do the pulling. But as soon as using friction. But as soon as that's gone, as soon as the friction's gone, this thing will do exactly what I said. It'll just grab the energy and it'll divide it among its pieces. Friction means it has to divide it with the ground also. So you hit it with energy. Part of the energy goes in here, but part of the energy goes in here, which you don't want. That's why friction is it breaks the simple experiment. So you have no evidence of the experiment done in space where there's anything called inertia stopping a big thing from moving. There's no evidence big things don't move with little tiny pieces of energy hitting them. Little tiny piece of energy hits it, it moves. It doesn't move the same speed as the little tiny piece of energy. No, it divides the speed over its entire mass. Yeah, not a complicated argument. All right, so I'll pause this video. Well, maybe I'll add another piece to it later. We'll see what I feel like doing. And such. So I guess, yeah, I'll do that. Might as well combine the videos. Right, I'll do the gravity argument again or something like that. Or maybe the Brozo will make his video and I can add that. But anyway, till the next time and such. Well, till the very soon and such. Alright, I'm back. Nice little transition. It's a little bright. Anyway, so here are a couple of the comments that I think are just kind of funny by Brozo. So, you know, at least we have something to look forward to. So in here he's arguing with this guy about this 90-degree angle, and obviously Brozo is full of shit. It's clear. I showed the image. It's clearly 90 degrees. And so he says here, "I have some bad news for your claim. I will publish footage as soon as possible." So that was a day ago, of course. So what's there's nothing he can do to counteract these arguments that it's clear, you know, frankly, from further analysis that it wasn't an accident, all right, that they came up with the 1-to-2 relationship between 50 miles an hour and 100, or twice the mass going half the velocity. Well, it's really, yes, twice, no, same mass going either twice the velocity or just one velocity. Yeah, that's what they did. Yeah, so, you know, it's game over on that one. If you want to make some argument about how clay doesn't work as a medium for detecting energy, well, then go ahead and make that claim. I don't, I'm not opposed, because frankly it is, you know, it's worthy of debate. I mean, the whole idea of how to capture the image of energy transfer does raise questions, and there's certain experiments that can pick out the truth and certain ones that can't. Now, I think the idea of using the lever and springs perhaps to conserve the energy is probably the way to go. But anyway, all right, so we'll have to wait and see what that big surprise is. So this is the thread that has the more interesting crapola in it, but you have to go through an awful lot of comments to get to the interesting bit. All right, so Brozo says he did this vertical drop because he says, "I redid the clay compression experience the sensible way." Yeah, I don't know. A straight for a forward vertical drop from 3 inches, then 12 inches. Not volume displacement, not initially anyway. So I don't even know what he's talking about. Volume displacement, I would imagine the clay will have to be displaced. Yeah, so... All right, anyway, I predicted 3x. Now, why would he do that, right? So he believes in the kinetic energy theory, and yet he would predict, when you go 4 times higher, that would only be 3x, the deformation of the clay. I mean, why would you predict that? It's curious. Anyway, not 2x. Well, guess what? I was wrong. It compressed 4x, almost exactly. So... the reason I got the correct kinetic energy result, the same as volume displacement. No, volume displacement with round objects. So let's understand, it doesn't work. Volume displacement doesn't work if you don't use round objects. Is because I allowed enough clay to be compressed. So that's, he's basically just saying that's code word for I had a taller pillar of clay. So he's putting the clay apparently on the ground, let's say. And he's just dropping something on it. So the Mythbusters, obviously they had a steel rod to make sure everything stayed in alignment. So the rod actually went through the clay. So it kept the clay from changing its position, bending, twisting, spinning, doing lots of things that would absorb more energy. All right, so he obviously apparently didn't do any of that. He just dropped things onto a pillar of clay. Now, you can understand when something falls that even humans, you know, the thing hits and they start to bend. They don't crush straight down. Now they start to bend, okay, and twist and, you know, try to maintain their shape and absorb the energy. So the clay would do the same thing. So he's really just going to talk about how much the clay bends And obviously that wouldn't be necessarily consistent with the amount of energy you hit it with or the speed. Speed would make a difference. All right, so anyway. So he puts in capital letters, ruled out the possibility of measuring the correct displacement compression by not allowing enough clay available to be compressed. So obviously the amount of clay just has to be any clay. You're just moving the clay out sideways. So it's like pushing water in a cylinder. There'd be no expectation that it's harder to push the water when there's only 1 inch of water left versus 6 inches. It's the same amount of pressure. You could apply a constant pressure and you could have a hose and a constant amount of water will come out all the way to the very last drop. That's the way it works. So he has no theory for this idea that you have to have a certain amount of clay. No, you don't. You have to have some clay, that's all. Even if they use 1,000 times more energy. So yes, if there's no clay, there's no clay to compress. So yeah, 1,000 times more energy won't matter. But 1,000 times more energy with clay in between the two pieces of metal will result in the clay being displaced. All right, they tried to get two pints out of 1 pint pot, as they say. So that's just absolute nonsense. There's absolutely no theoretical reasoning to defend any theory that if there's 2 inches of clay or 1 inch of clay, it's harder to compress. Are easier to compress. Just no evidence. They made it impossible to achieve the correct result. Sorry. You don't have any theory for that. So he says, so Mythbusters busted. So he hasn't busted anything, obviously. By coincidence, Megatubrain, whatever that is, tried to defend the indefensible again. So yes, he pointed out how it's clear the Mythbusters experiment is done within a 90-degree range. You can see photographs of the bar being completely horizontal at the top and completely vertical at the bottom. There's absolutely no doubt that it's 90 degrees. With some pack-daff excuse, I'm beginning to realize some of these people are just thick as pig's will. Whatever. Pig swill? You would know about pig swill. You know, no doubt that's what you've been eating for the 643 years you've been alive. Anyway, the moral of the story is if you allow enough clay, so it's enough of an escape route. So he's saying that the clay can't go anywhere. When the sides are completely open, the clay has the same opportunity to leave. There's absolutely nothing stopping the clay from going sideways. Nothing. I.e. not squished so flat there's no room left for the clay to displace into. So it's displacing into open air. There's no counterforce that changes and gets stronger. It's just nonsense. Then you're still measuring volume displacement. All right. Let's see, now in fairness, now is this nonsense talk? Mythbusters are doubly wrong because they actually said 2x, that's about right, isn't it? Well, they said that's about right, isn't it? Because they already talked about the car crashes, and the car crashes are 2 to 1. So, I mean, it's completely consistent with what the car crashes did. Twice the compression with the 100 mile, they had already crashed the cars in a previous episode, retard. So they already knew these answers, retard. Okay, and they were wrong. It wasn't about right. Well, it was about perfectly consistent with what they observed when they crashed the cars. All right, it was about as wrong as it could be, except perfectly consistent with their previous experiment. Okay, so it's as wrong as it could be, except perfectly consistent with what their previous experiment or results produced. The kinetic energy theory still works. It doesn't even pass your lever test. So this is just remember he did the actual experiment with a lever and a spring. The spring pushed the two mass object closer to the fulcrum. The number was 11, and then the half mass twice the distance was 19 and 11. You can sort of see there's a pretty close relationship to 2 to 1 there. So he's already proven that kinetic energy doesn't work. the argument would be is the same force, the same spring, somehow produced twice, you know, by their theory, four times more energy, okay, in the lighter object. I mean, you know, more than three times. A lot more than three times more energy. And how did it do that? I mean, it's the same force. How can it produce three times the energy? All right. I had no idea so many people were on Gary's side. Yeah, frankly, I don't see any of them. Seriously thinking Mythbusters disproved kinetic energy. Well, they clearly made an episode that's just plain retarded. In the sense that they didn't realize that, yes, they have just proven kinetic energy is the myth. And they claimed a myth was debunked that was completely idiotic, which means if two 50-mile-an-hour cars hit you moving in opposite directions, it's going to feel like 100 miles an hour, because that's a truth. It's not going to feel like no 50-mile-an-hour crash. Makes you wonder how many of Gary's other nutty ideas they believe in, too. Again, this isn't about believing in my ideas. It's about reasoning and logic, which you can't do at all. Okay, you provide nothing. Absolutely, you just tell us Jesus exists. You have no theory to explain how he could have existed or how their evidence makes any sense. You respond to absolutely not a single one of the arguments that have made against you and your reasoning. And you're a pathetic coward. All right. So, blah, 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 test, and so let's see what else he says here. Hi, John. Sorry, I only just found these two or three, so it's always talking about comments. Make copies of your comments. Let's see if he says anything about when he's going to publish his... Nothing there. So, let's see. He's got to go do stuff for the welfare whores. He's way too busy. Math comment. Let's see if he says anything else that's anywhere near the subject. Not so far. So again, he's talking about copying your comments before you post them, because you will have to retype them. So that's it. So that wasn't worth much. But anyway, so he's got an experiment to show, and I'm sure it's going to be crap. I thought there was something where he said that he measured with a tape measure. So he's just going to measure how far the thing smashes, and he's not going to show us what the clay looks like. Because I think if we see what the clay looks like, we'll see it didn't compress evenly or flat. It compressed unevenly, and that means it just cracked in half. It bent, that kind of thing. All right. So it's going to be a real garbage experiment. So again, he's just trying to force the results. Kind of obviously, and like this argument was just so bad where he made this preposterous claim that they dropped it from 60 degrees, just no evidence for it, nothing. Yeah. All right. So, I don't know why he has all these uneven sized blobs of clay. And again, he's still making, this is after I've already shown the image, so he obviously doesn't watch any of the counter arguments. He still thinks they use tin cans, in the experiment, when they were obviously steel cylinders, solid steel cylinders. What an idiot. All right. I think there's something else I wanted to do, so I'll take a pause here and decide if there's anything else worth doing. I wanted to talk a little bit about gravity, I think. So maybe I'll do that. So let me just pause and see if I get to it now. Whoa, back. sun is not in a great position. Hey, my hair is like transparent in the sun. It's funny. Anyway, I don't even know if this will show up. Yeah, it will. Good. All right. It should anyway. Oh, boy, blinding. I'll pay attention to the board. All right, so there's a couple of arguments to be made about, this idea of seeing how much energy something has. So, we don't have any examples where they take the energy in the form of fuel, like gasoline or something, and then just apply it to the two circumstances of, how, if I make something go one half the velocity versus one velocity, do I use four times more fuel? okay, to make this happen. Okay, 60 miles an hour versus, say, 30 miles an hour. We don't have that experiment.
So that would be a good way to test the theory,
is to actually see things consume more, four times more fuel. So the other way to test is just to say, okay, take your objects, smash them into something, and see what kind of effect they have on the thing, and see if you can measure what that means in terms of the energy use. So in this case, it's clay. So you're putting clay between, you know, theoretically, they could have just used a hard surface and put the clay on the surface, right? So this is your clay, and you're just going to smash something into it. So what's happening to the clay molecules? How are they testing for the energy? And the theory, I would argue, is that obviously they're initially being pushed in this direction, but they can't go in that direction, so they end up having to go this way and this way. So you're doing a lot of conversions. You're starting off pushing something, it goes this way, the energy can't be used that way, so it ends up pushing something this way. And then how does this thing stop? Well, it has to stop by hitting other things and eventually turning the energy into such tiny little bits of movement, you know, heat. So it takes a big movements, and it converts the big movements into eventually little tiny movements, and that's how the energy is finally dissipated through the object. But it's dissipated, so it's turned into some other kind of energy, and then that energy radiates off, like I said, the heat. So everything gets converted, theoretically, into either heat or the movement of some atmospheric molecules. But there's not much else that can take place. There isn't much chemistry transfer. You're not changing the chemical compounds of the clay. You're just moving the little bits in a water medium, essentially. I mean, that's what clay is, right? It's just a lot of sediment inside a tiny bit of water. Okay, and you're just moving the little pieces of dirt in the water medium. Anyway, it's any dynamic of a liquid. So it's just like, essentially, you know, the ocean thing where you drop something into the ocean and it makes a wave up. Okay, because it can't compress the water below it. And it can't compress the water this way either, so it has to push the water up against gravity. And in this case, the clay just gets pushed into the softest place to go, the place that has the least resistance, which is the atmosphere. So it goes where it can go. But there's no theory that says, you know, these 15 contacts that take place before it turns to heat are always the same. A fast object could make it happen in 10 steps. A slower velocity means it happens in 15 steps. So that could change how much energy is absorbed. So the only thing arguing for clay is the fact that, well, I got the right answer. Okay. Now, Brozo thinks the way you should do it is to dump, you know, drop round things into clay. And obviously, I've made the argument that the round thing does, first, it makes craters, and second, it doesn't push the clay on the surface evenly. Some parts of the surface are pushing clay this way, and some are pushing clay this way, and it's very uneven at first. You're pushing a very flat surface in, and the deeper you go, the more you're pushing just sideways. All right, so it's a very different experimental. The energy is obviously hitting the clay in very different directions if the surface is irregular. So that's a reason to doubt that as a good theory. So I've been arguing that, yes, springs are really pretty good. They're pretty well tested, that you can get 95% of the energy you put into a spring, you can get back from the spring. It's pretty good at giving you back what you put in, okay? So it's a storage device, so it doesn't make a bunch of heat. It doesn't do a lot of deforming. It just, you know, the metal itself stays the same shape. And what's really happening is a bunch of atoms are just sliding over each other, and they just want to slide back. You know, so they're in these irregular positions, and they want to just slide back to regular positions. You know, and so it's just a magnetic argument that they're really just atoms that are being misaligned, and they're going to push back as soon as they're given the opportunity. So they just collect the pressure, the displacement in their movement, and no matter, you know, the amount of displacement will be spread through all the parts of the spring, and the spring will give it back. So it hasn't lost the energy to heat, and it hasn't lost the energy to any permanent deformation, and everything will go back to the way it was with a very little bit of loss to a little tiny bit of heat. So you can keep a lot, you can measure your energy. It's pretty good at measuring. So yeah, you put the one mass in at, one velocity, and then you do the half mass at two velocity, and you just see what the spring does. Is the spring's just going to measure how much energy went in? It's going to compress a certain amount. The amount it's compressed is just saying I have 9 pounds of pressure, or I have 18 pounds of pressure, or I have 25 pounds of pressure. It's just going to deliver the pressure back. And the pressure will decide how far something's going. You push one object with 9 pounds, one mass, and it'll go a certain distance. You take double the mass, you can be pretty assured it's going to be half the distance, half the amount of velocity anyway. Distance again gets into the silly argument about friction and the fact that friction isn't even, because it's controlled, generally speaking. Most of the friction we're familiar with is ground friction, and that's controlled by gravity. Alright, so that's probably enough. I mean, I could do that. I could just restate over and over again. This is about the fact, the only reason why they believe this nonsense is because gravity does this 1, 2, 3, 4 thing. Right? So, yeah, the one distance, okay, is a certain unit, and then in the next unit of time, you do 3 units of distance. Okay, so it's the Galilean thing. So, if you go 4 times higher, you're only going to get twice the velocity, but you're only in the gravity twice as long. So it's twice the time, twice the velocity. I would argue clearly twice the weight. So if you measure it on a spring, you're going to get twice the weight also. So you have all of these twos that kind of tell you there's no way, okay, falling in gravity is 4 times the work, okay, or 4 times the energy being produced. Because it isn't. Because the fact is, you're not in the gravity 4 times as long. It can't affect you if you're not in it. It's gravity is a rain. Gravity is a force differential, and it depends on how long you're in that force differential will decide how much it affects you. That's simple. Whether you believe it's a bent geodesic or not, it's still time dependent. If you're standing in gravity, obviously it's going to move you very well. And if you're moving past the gravity, against the gravity, it's not going to move you nearly as well. Alright, come on. It's too obvious. Alright. So they just keep ignoring all of these twos. 2, 2, 2, and it's really 2, the energy also. No doubt about it. Weight is pressure. 2 times the pressure. You can just 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2. It's 2 everywhere. There's absolutely no reason to believe this 4 nonsense. Alright. So, that's probably enough of a video. So, till the next time and such, and so forth and whatnot. This has been at draftphysics.com, debatephysics.com also. But debate requires responding to arguments made. And the opposing side, it responds to absolutely 0 of the arguments made, and I probably have a 99% record. I even respond to ones that are disgusting and violate all kinds of ethical rules, that are quite indecent, and I still respond. All right, anyway. So, till the next time and such, and so forth and whatnot.